back to the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. I'm your host, Allison, and today I'm joined once again by Ryan Pryor for part two of what even is the theme of this episode? What's the best way to
JFK does Vietnam. No. It is
JFK foreign policy, but it's like so focused on Vietnam.
Cold
War president.
JFK, the Vietnam vixen.
No. What? Help me think of what this is so I can know how to title these.
JFK,
right?
No, that's dumb.
Really?
Yes. Ouch. How? Like, that's like...
My Enneagram one just cried.
I'm sorry. That's like being like, what kind of flavor ice cream do you want? And you being like, I want vanilla.
Ew. Yeah, that's a good point.
Exactly.
Okay, I can accept that criticism.
JFK and the Vietnam... No. Ich bin ein Vietnam.
Do you know, I saw a TikTok about that statement that he said, and someone actually broke down what he said, and he said something about a jelly donut from his pronunciation.
Oh.
Yeah.
Somebody you would have thunk that would have been LBJ.
Thank you to whoever sent me that. I remember
because
watching
he was
it
so
laughing.
Portly.
Oh, we got to talk about LBJ in this episode a little bit.
LBJ, you say?
Yes.
You mean my second favorite president?
How on God's green earth? It makes no sense. Who's your first? Wait, let me guess. Oh, is it?
John F. Kennedy, JFK. The F stands for foreign policy.
Oh, that's terrible.
No.
Wait, no. I'm trying to think. Guess your favorite president. I know you've told me this before, but I forget. Okay, what time period of our... Like, don't give a year, but like...
What? What do you say that again?
What time period was your favorite president in?
My favorite president?
Yeah, I'm trying to guess
1901. 1901 to 1912.
Oh, isn't that Theodore Roosevelt?
Yes.
Okay, well, that was easy. That's so cliche. Everybody likes
it's not
Roosevelt.
Sorry.
That's my opinion.
That's Allison's opinion.
I'm totally using that. I'm not even joking. Well,
okay. We'll think of a name. I'm going to come up with a name. It always happens. I will come up with one throughout this thing. There is this great line from a great book called The Things They Carry. No, it's not The Things They Carry. I'm sorry. It's from the first line of Apocalypse Now, and it's just Saigon. Shit. And it's just a phrase. Everybody, Saigon. Shit.
That'll be the title of the episode.
All right, so speaking of Saigon.
Wait, I got to say one thing. I always worry that when we start a part two, because we've already been talking for like an hour, and then we talk before the podcast too, just like catching up. So I always worry that we're not going to have banter at the beginning of part two, that we'll just get right into it. And we always somehow find some shit to talk about.
You're talking about we're the king and queen of banter. We got banter.
We do. We got it.
Speaking of banter.
Oof.
Banter starts with B, and so does Buddhist.
Oh, is it Buddhist or Buddhist?
It's Buddhist.
I don't know that I agree with that. I've heard it pronounced Buddhist my whole life. Now, I am a Southern gal, so I don't know if it was mispronounced, but you are a Southern gent, so I'm wondering.
It is, I believe it is Buddhist. Caroline?
Yeah, ask her.
Is it Buddhist or Buddhist? I think either it works, but
no,
anyway.
What did she say? I couldn't hear.
She said Buddhist.
Yeah, there it is. My girl.
I don't like this.
Buddhist.
So anyway, the Buddhists, as you might recall, the Diem government was basically brutally criminalizing Buddhism, making treating them as second class citizens, dragging them from their homes and taking away their rights and things like this, which is, I mean, a weird thing to consider since it was Vietnam. But you got to remember that Diem was a product of French imperialism in Vietnam. This all comes to a head in 1963 when a guy by the name of, and I do not want to get this wrong. I'm going to pronounce it Thich Quang Duc.
I will insert the pronunciation right now.
Thich Quang Duc.
And this all came to a head when he decided to self-immolate. Now, do you know, Kennedy Dynasty listeners and Allison, what self-immolation is?
I don't, but I hate when you quiz me because it makes me feel stupid. I feel like after you'll say it, I'll know it. What is it?
Basically, one day in 1960, in June of 1963,
self-immolate. Wouldn't that mean that he wanted
self-immolate?
Oh,
immolate.
All right, go ahead. I don't know.
One day, Duck, in June of 1963, walked into an intersection in Saigon, sat down on the ground, poured a gallon of gasoline on his head, and lit himself on fire.
Oh, my God.
And there's an incredible, there's a picture of this. It's pretty famous. It's him sitting in there burning to death. And he did it as a protest of the Diem government. This is one of the first viral photographs of history. Every newspaper in the United States picked it up across the world. It was on TV. It was huge. It really brought a lot of light to the Diem government's oppression of Buddhist people. Immolation is one of those terms that only gets used a little bit in history. There's also the term that it's a cool one, historically speaking, because it doesn't happen all that often, although it does happen a couple of times significantly, this being the most significant. There's also the term defenestration, and this is just a side thing. It means to be thrown out a window.
Oh, how do you know what that is? How do you know what these are, honestly?
Because most famously, it happened in Prague, and it began the Hundred Years' War, my love, the defenestration of Prague. 30 years war? This isn't a period. 30 years war. No, they won't. It's European history. I haven't done European history in quite a long time.
You two are the most brilliant couple I've ever known. Like, Jeffrey and I sit around and talk about, like, dachshunds in Disney World. I looked at my dachshund. That's what made me think of that.
Defenestrations of Prague.
What was the big one? What was the big defenestration?
The 30 years war was the second defenestration.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Then that would be the third.
The third defenestration of Prague began the 30 Years' War. There were two other defenestrations to speak of, but no other immolations at the time. I actually don't know that, but they didn't have gasoline. So this was in the 1600s. If you'd have tried to self-immolate in the 1600s, you'd probably have to pour like whale oil on you.
Oh, shoot.
Can you imagine someone just pouring?
Is that flammable?
Yes. That's how they used to light their lamps before they discovered oil, petroleum, like petroleum oils. They would take whale fat and they would melt it down and then it would be used as
okay. My question
fuel.
Is when are you guys going on Jeopardy?
I don't want to go on Jeopardy now that my man is dead.
Oh,
plus
right.
they screwed up everything. LeVar Burton, yeah. I ran a campaign on Instagram. I'm sure Allison remembers this. I spent a whole week trying to make sure that LeVar Burton was the next host of Jeopardy. And then those mother truckers decided to just completely F it up. And so I'm boycotting Jeopardy for a while.
Okay. But I also want to note that Ryan has spectacular Instagram stories. They really just capture the moments that he's in.
I am very funny online.
Sure. But the issue is, he doesn't know how to Instagram. So he ran this campaign and finally on day, let's say 4 of 7, I'm like, hey, you probably need to tag Jeopardy so they see this. Like,
yeah,
you were literally posting it out and then
it
wasn't getting
anywhere. I don't have a lot of followers, guys. But I am so funny online. Like, I am absolutely hilarious. It's a treat to follow me. Yeah, I did not know how to tag Jeopardy. Still don't. Honestly,
I wrote back, how do I do that? And I was like,
whenever people repost stuff onto their stories and it's like a still image of like a video, I don't know how to get to that. I don't know how people get to that.
You
I don't understand.
I even put tap to watch so people like you will know. You tap the video and it takes
I've
you to
tried
the post.
That. It doesn't work. It just goes
you
to the next
to,
video.
Because you don't tap the direct thing. Just tap on the video a couple times. It'll pop up. It'll take you
I'm
to
not,
the post.
That's just too complicated.
This it's is painful. Not, I mean, okay. Honestly.
Caroline raised her hand.
Yes.
The earliest recorded self-immolation was in 396 AD by a Chinese monk. How did he do it?
Whale oil.
It's interesting. She said it was interesting. We should ask. He publicly swallowed incense chip, wrapped his body in oiled cloth, and chanted while setting fire to himself.
This is making me in pain.
Well, I think you're not as nearly as much in pain as Thick Quang Duck.
I think you're correct. That's terrible.
This man's name was Fei Yu. So...
Wow, this got dark.
Basically, Kennedy, after this incident, Kennedy reached out to the Diem government and pleaded with him to stop the persecution of Buddhists, but Diem instead doubled down on the persecution of Buddhists, declaring martial law in August of 1963, which is The Trouble with Dictators. That's a great title, The Trouble with Dictators.
That's a good one. Okay, nailed it.
JFK and The Trouble with Dictators.
Love it. That's the title of a book. Ryan's next book.
I'm high-fiving.
He's high-fiving there. Yeah.
And my dog. Hello, Hugo. Okay. There soon became rumblings that there was going to be a coup in Saigon. because when you declare martial law, you tend to make a lot of enemies. And so on August 24th, 1963, a cable, it's called Cable 243, was sent to the U.S. ambassador of South Vietnam. Man's name was Henry Cabot Lodge. Mm-hmm. Henry Cabot Lodge, who you may have heard of. And basically, it supported the coup of President Diem.
I'm going to insert a clip of a personal recording that JFK made talking about the situation in Vietnam on November 4th of 1963. This is courtesy of the JFK Library. Listen closely, though, because you can hear John Jr. joining the conversation at the end, and it's super cute.
Monday, November 4th, 1963. Over the weekend, the coup in Saigon took place. Culminated 3 months of conversation about a coup, conversation which divided the government here and in Saigon. Opposed to a coup was General Taylor, the Attorney General, Secretary McNamara, to a somewhat less degree, John McCone, partly because of an old hostility to Lodge, which causes him to lack confidence in Lodge's judgment, partly as a result of a new hostility, because Lodge shifted his station chief. Semicolon, in favor of the coup was State, led by Abel Harriman, George Ball, Roger Hilsman, supported by Mike Foster at the White House. I feel that we must bear a good deal of responsibility for it, beginning with our cable of early August, in which we suggested the coup. Period, in my judgment, that wire was badly drafted. It should never have been sent on a Saturday. I should not have given my consent to it without it. Roundtable conference in which McNamara and Taylor could have presented their views. While we did redress that balance in later wires, that first wire encouraged Lodge along a course to which he was, in any case, inclined. Hawkins continued to oppose the coup on the ground that the military effort was doing well. There was a sharp split between Saigon and the rest of the country. Politically, the situation was deteriorating. Militarily, it had not had its effect. There was a feeling, however, that it would. For this reason, Secretary McNamara and General Taylor supported applying additional pressures to Diem and New in order to move them.
Hello.
Why do the leaves fall? And why does the snow come on the ground?
Because.
Why do the leaves turn green?
Because.
Spring. And where do we go to the Cape transport?
It's
summer.
And then you went to.
I was shocked by the death of Diem and New. I'd met Diem with Justice Douglas many years ago. He was an extraordinary character. While he became increasingly difficult in the last months, nevertheless, over a 10-year period, he'd held his country together, maintained its independence under very adverse conditions. The way he was killed made it particularly abhorrent. The question now is whether the generals can stay together and build a stable government, or whether Saigon will begin to turn on public opinion in Saigon, the intellectual students, etc., will turn on this government as repressive and undemocratic in the not-too-distant future.
Basically, the thing was is the United States government took on the position, or at least unofficially took on the position, that Diem was needed to replace his brother, who was basically in charge of Diem's like sort of like secret police and everything, who was barbaric. And if not, he was gone. And Kennedy later met with the advisors and expressed reservations about supporting the coup and whether or not the United States should even continue its involvement with the coup, because they didn't want to destabilize the region and they didn't want their names being attached to it and they didn't want all these other things. But again, this is an example of sort of a young president. You know, one of the biggest criticisms of Kennedy is that he was sort of often caught in, you know, a crossroads, not knowing what decision to make. I don't know whether that was of his own doing or not. But and so in September of 1963, Kennedy granted two different interviews, one to Walter Cronkite.
Mr. President, the only hot war we've got running at the moment is, of course, the one in Vietnam. And we've got our difficulties there, quite obviously. The headline and the story in the New York Times yesterday morning was rather an interesting one. It said that the administration will try diplomacy in Vietnam, which I'd assume we've been trying all along. What can we do in this situation, which seems to parallel other famous debacles of dealing with unpopular governments in the past?
Well, in the first place, we ought to realize that Vietnam has been at war for 25 years, and the Japanese, years. I remember a good many people who said 2 years ago that it wouldn't last 6 months. A good many newspapers said that. A good many local correspondents said it. Well, it's still, the war is still going. In many ways, it's going better. That doesn't mean, however, that the events of the last 2 months aren't very ominous. I don't think that unless a greater effort is made by the government to win popular support, that the war can be won out there. In the final analysis, it's their war. They're the ones who have to win it or lose it. We can help them. We can give them equipment. We can send our men out there as advisors, but they have to win it, the people of Vietnam, against the communists. We're prepared to continue to assist them, but I don't think that the war can be won unless the people support the effort. And in my opinion, in the last 2 months, the government has gotten out of touch with the people. The repressions against the Buddhists, we felt, were very unwise. Now, all we can do is to make it very clear that we don't think this is the way to win. It's my hope that this will become increasingly obvious to the government, that they will take steps to try to bring back popular support for this very essential struggle. But these people who say that we ought to withdraw from Vietnam are wholly wrong, because if we withdrew from Vietnam, the communists would control Vietnam. Pretty soon, Thailand, Cambodia, Laos, Malaya would go, and all of Southeast Asia would be under the control of the communists and under the domination of the Chinese. And then India, Burma would be the next target. So I think we should stay. We should make it clear, as Ambassador Lodge is now making it clear, that while we want to help, we don't see a successful ending to this war unless the people will support it. And the people will not support the effort if the government continues to follow the policy of the past 2 months. I hope that will be clear to the government. Should be. After all, they've been conducting this struggle for 10 years, and I admire what the president has done. He's been counted out a number of times. I'm hopeful that he will come to see that they have to reestablish their relationship. But we ought to remember that they're the ones who are dying by the thousands, and they're the ones who have to win this war, or they're the ones who will lose it. We can't do either. We can assist them to win it, and we can warn them against losing it. But the United States is not the... We don't have troops in mass who are dying by the thousands, and we do the best we can to make it clear what policy they should follow, but they have to decide it.
Who you may know as probably the most trusted news anchor of the last 50 years, you know, most famous for his phrase, "And that's the way it is."
And that's the way it is.
And then another one with David Brinkley, and this is on CBS and NBC.
Has our government in any way been tardy in recognizing the nature of the Diem government, you think?
Well, the Diem government is there. It's been there a decade. And as I've said, for the last 2 years, in our opinion, the military opinion out there, General Hawkins and others, the struggle was going better. So that it's pretty hard. We don't want to carry on a direct assault upon the government. We have to deal with the government that is there. What has concerned us is the events of the past 2 months do not give us as great assurance for success in the struggle as was true up till May and June. Now we are attempting to use our influence to bring the situation back to what it was.
And both times he was asked about Vietnam, and after the Cronkite interview, and there was a clip of his answer concerning the situation in Vietnam with the Diem administration. And that clip was then sent to Henry Cabot Lodge, who was told, quote, "This represents the official U.S. position on Vietnam."
Oof.
Yeah, so basically it took until a TV interview for Kennedy to basically clarify the United States' official position on Vietnam.
Sure. And I'll probably also, I may have already done it in this episode, but I'll probably sprinkle in a couple different press questions and stuff that he answered about Vietnam in general, too.
Yeah, so. That'd be a good idea. But basically, Kennedy did think ultimately that we should stay in Vietnam and figure out a way to deal with the aftermath of the overthrow of the Diem government, because it would make it easier for the communists if we left, basically. Again, foreign policy. Whatever would make it harder for communists, that's what we wanted to do. And so he met later with Secretary of Defense McNamara and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and sent them off to Vietnam. So they went off to Saigon, they went to South Vietnam, and in their public report, they noted that by the end of 1963, if all went well, more than 1,000 military personnel could be withdrawn if things were done properly. But of course, we know that that wouldn't happen. And on November 1st, 1963, South Vietnamese government was overthrown. Diem government was overthrown. And Diem was assassinated. In the last few weeks of his life, Kennedy himself, before he was assassinated, he wrestled with the idea of what to do with the remaining 16,000 military personnel who were in Vietnam. And the question as to whether Kennedy would have escalated that tension as Johnson did is still a hotly debated topic by historians today. You know, those leftover 16,000 troops turned into over 500,000 troops by the time 1971 rolled around. So within 7 years' time, the United States had, you know, 500,000 soldiers, you know, in Vietnam, and over 55,000 American soldiers would die, not to mention the countless Vietnamese soldiers, of countless citizens of South Vietnam, and I mean the millions of Cambodians, and the Cambodians who are still dying to this day from unexploded ordnance left over from the Vietnam War. And so, yeah, it's a question. Would Kennedy, if he had been alive, decided to de-escalate the situation in Vietnam? Who knows? He would have been facing an election year for sure. And so there's probably political points for removing troops out of Vietnam. But then there's also the consideration that, you know, if you look weak on communism, all of a sudden, here come the Republicans, and they are saying, Kennedy weak on communism. Look how he let South Vietnam fall to the communists. Now it's just a matter of time before all of Southeast Asia falls to communism, and we'll have no influence there. So,
question. In your opinion, why do you think that the Vietnamese War escalated so much and so quickly during LBJ's presidency?
Because of the fact that the North Vietnamese communists had a vested interest in reunifying the country. That was the only thing they wanted to do. Ho Chi Minh, the communist leader of North Vietnam, his sole purpose was to reunify North and South Vietnam together. He believed that was imperative. And so had we not involved ourselves, it would have happened. It would have happened just as it did in 1975 when they became one country under communist rule. We knew for a fact that if we weren't there helping the South Vietnamese, specifically the government of Diem, and then eventually the next government that came around, that it would fall to communism.
Yeah, I wanted to share too that Kennedy said, another quote from him, from JFK Library, in September of 1963, President Kennedy declared in an interview, "In the final analysis, it is their war. They are the ones who have to win it or lose it. We can help them. We can give them equipment. We can send our men out there as advisors, but they have to win it, the people of Vietnam against the communists. But I don't agree with those who say that we should withdraw. That would be a great mistake. The United States made this effort to defend Europe. Now Europe is quite secure. We also have to participate. We may not like it in the defense of Asia."
Yeah, and again, that's the thing, is that there was a internal conflict between North and South Vietnam going on the entire time. Like, you know, I mean, there was war. This, even though the South Vietnamese government was doing horrific things, at least they weren't communists, which I don't know if that's, like I said, a viable excuse, you know, 60 years later. But that was the situation as it stood.
Sure. And I mean, that was September of 1963 when he said that and he died.
Oh, and by the way, right, we can make parallels between that and the 21st century. Like, you know, I mean, that same quote could have been said about Afghanistan, right? Like, it is their war.
That's what I thought, too. All right. You want to get to a couple more questions?
Then we'll wrap it up.
Therefore, in answer to your question.
So this is interesting. Someone asked you, what are your thoughts on the conspiracy that the Kennedys had something to do with Marilyn Monroe's death?
Marilyn Monroe's death.
Yeah.
She overdosed on barbiturates, I believe. I don't think that is the case at all. And the reason being is because it's quite clear that she was addicted to drugs, and it was quite clear that it was not something like, you know, it was a pretty common that Marilyn Monroe was a classic example, just like other musicians or whatever who died too young, of someone who was so famous that they literally couldn't understand the world around them and who from a young age became famous and then existed in a world where everyone knew who they were, and they dealt with it with drug use. And some of them survived and became older and, you know, faded into history, and some of them died young and became iconic. I think Marilyn Monroe, yeah, her, I mean, her affair with JFK is salacious and fun to talk about. But the idea that she was murdered because of her involvement with JFK, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I mean, sure. Is it something I could see Joe Kennedy doing? Absolutely.
The theory is actually that Bobby convinced her. There's a lot of theories, but the main one is that Bobby kind of convinced her, like said something to her that would have made her so very upset that she would have...
Yeah, I mean, that's spurious at best.
But I think that's how I feel about it, too. I mean,
I'm much more inclined to believe that LBJ had something to do with Kennedy's assassination than I am. Yeah.
Big statement. That is my opinion.
I mean, I'm not saying it's true, but I'm much more inclined to believe that. And do you believe that, actually?
I'm curious.
I don't believe that. I do, however, believe... I do think that there... To me, it's always been kind of interesting that Lee Harvey Oswald was killed by Jack Ruby almost immediately after he was. It just doesn't. And then Jack Ruby has very little reason for why he shot Lee Harvey Oswald. Yeah. You know what
I mean? You need to read Dan Abrams' book, Kennedy's Avenger, who, if you haven't heard that interview, I was able to interview about his book.
Yes, but you should go listen to that episode.
I'll send it to you if you want to read it. Oh, yeah. Also, I'm listening through the Warren Commission right now.
Oh.
Which is very interesting. So I will end up having...
You should do a whole series on the Warren Commission.
That's why I'm listening to it. But it's hours and hours. I mean, it's going to take a while. And then I actually had a listener message me, which thank you, shout out to you, for messaging me a really great book recommendation. So I'm trying to like really study it to get... Because a lot of people don't even believe the findings of the Warren Commission anyway. So I'm going to try to get a full scope and then we'll see where we go from there. You're welcome to study along with me.
And you should teach me about the... Because I know what the Warren Commission is, but that's the extent of the fact that I know that it was named
after... That would be fun.
What, I think it was named after Earl Warren?
Earl Warren, yeah.
Yeah. So, honestly, you would be teaching me something, and I could ask you questions.
Love it. We're going to do that. All right. Last question, which I'm going to rephrase this one a little bit, because it says, for Pryor, what made you get into the Kennedy family? But I know that you're not as fascinated with them as I am, or, like, say, even my audience. So...
I like the Kennedys just fine. I mean, sure. Like, I'm not into them.
No, I know. I think a better phrasing for you for that question would be... What do you find the most interesting about the Kennedys?
Yeah, I mean, it's the fact that a presidency of 3 years is such an incredible, like, has had so many different things happen in it. I mean, it's just a presidency of less than a full term had so much intricacy. And additionally, it's just the mythos. I mean, the mythos of the family. And again, you have a family that, I mean, just dies mysteriously for no reason, you know, not mysteriously, but, you know, two brothers assassinated in the same decade, both of whom for different reasons, but like they're as far as I'm concerned, the Kennedys are fascinating because of their perpetuation throughout our history of the last 100 years, but also because drama just seems to happen to them.
All right. Well, Pryor, once again, thank you so much for teaching us all the things and for joining me. This was
all
lots
of the
fun.
Things. Yeah.
We had a lot of banter in this one. Hopefully people were cool with that too.
There's a lot of banter here. There's a lot of good material on which you can make sound bites. Caroline says that she's sorry she came home in the middle of it, but I just think it added some nice...
No, I'm glad she's here. It adds character and I love her. A couple things I want to announce too. My buddy John Driver's book is finally out. So exciting. So Not So Black and White. You can get it anywhere books are sold now. I'm going to link it again in the episode description of this podcast. My husband finished it in literally a day and a half on our vacation a couple weeks ago. It's phenomenal. Everyone should read it. So I'm going to link that. I've got my Hyannis Port sweatshirt, among other awesome merch items, which, Brian, when we get off here, I'm going to send you a sweatshirt. You've earned one. So let me know which one you want. But anyway, that's a little overdue. But anyway, go check out my merch shop. I've got tons of cozy fall things, t-shirts, mugs, sweatshirts, all the things, hoodies. Go get them. I think that's all I got. So I will talk to you guys next week. Thanks again, Ryan.
Adios. Come on and vote for Kennedy. Vote for Kennedy. Keep America strong. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling up. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling up. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling along. Vote for Kennedy. Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis.
You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5-Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.